Hello, and welcome to the Inside of Ease podcast for July the 29th, 2022. This is episode number 121. On today's show, we'll be talking about the debut of the Mini Aceman concept, what the Inflation Reduction Act does for EV buyers, and General Motors signs long-term battery mineral supply agreements. I'm Dominic Yoni, Inside EV's forum moderator and Inside EV's editor. Joining us today is the irrepressible Mr. Tom Malogny, Inside EV's editor and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge. We also have the mannered Mr. Martin Lee from the EV News Daily podcast, which is available on all the best podcast platforms. And of course, the convivial Kyle Connor joins us from the majestic, practically palatial halls of the European offices of Autospec Studios, where he produces high-voltage videos for a growing number of YouTube channels. Okay, so before we get going, I'd like to ask that you please subscribe to the channel. If you're watching us on YouTube, please hit that thumbs up button and ring that bell icon for notifications so you'll know immediately when a new video is published. If you're watching us on Twitch, which I suggest that you do sometimes, you can also ring that bell icon for notifications. All right. So with that out of the way, welcome everybody.
Good y'all morning.
Y'all had a good week?
Hey, yeah. Guys.
All right. So some big news this week. Let's just kick it off, I guess, by talking about it, and then we'll get to what we've been driving, and we've got some really cool stuff that we've been driving. I can't. If you anyone watching Kyle Connor's Twitter feed will know what's up, but yeah. So let's get to the news. So the big news this week has to be the EV incentives package that are part of the so-called Inflation Reduction Act. I guess you've all seen this.
Yep.
Tom, you see this?
Excuse me?
Did you hear about it?
Oh, yeah. I think it would be hard not to.
Right.
We've been talking about this forever, about how we need a revision of the tax credit.
Right.
I think they made some good steps. This isn't how I would have done it, but I didn't expect them to nail it. You know, it's... you've got so many special interests pulling in different directions,
right,
and they're going to win. You know, we have to just give into that and accept that, you know, that's what's going to happen. It's going to end up with, we're going to end up with something that hopefully would be better than what it was replacing. I think it probably is better than what it's replacing, probably not by much, but it's an improvement. It's going to be really interesting to see how this works out and how the whole mineral content figured out.
Let me lay all that out for a second so everyone knows we're all on the same page. So the legislation is basically a deal worked out between Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer and Joe Manchin. Like Schumer, Manchin is also a Democrat, but sometimes he votes against Democrat bills, especially like when this was came up originally. It was part of the big New Green Deal or whatever package, and he rejected that. So anyway, the bill has yet to be put to a vote, and it's still possible that Senator Kyrsten Sinema could, along with all the other Republican senators, sink the whole thing, but hopes are high it will pass. So this bill is a pretty big deal. The electric vehicle-related part of it converts the $7,500 tax credit that we have now into a refundable credit so that everybody can take full advantage of the full amount if certain criteria are met. So vehicles from automakers that have reached a previous 200,000 vehicle cutoff are now eligible again, like Tesla and General Motors. And there's also a $4,000 credit for used vehicles, electric vehicles. So this is far from a straightforward piece of legislation, though. So here's what's eligible. So new vehicle credit is only for those with less than $150,000 of income, or $300,000 if you're filing jointly. $4,000 used vehicle credit. That's only if you have a max for those with a maximum income of $75,000 or $150,000 for joint filers. Max price for EVs that will qualify for the credits is $80,000 for SUVs, pickups, and vans, $55,000 for smaller vehicles, and then $25,000 for used vehicles. So additionally, used vehicles must be sold by a dealer, and the credit applies to the first time a car is resold. And I guess they keep track of the VIN numbers so they know what's up with each car. And I'm just about done. I know this is a lot to talk through, but
It's wildly complicated, perhaps unnecessarily so.
Right. Well, here's where it gets more complicated, and it seems likely down the road. So cars will stay eligible, and some may lose eligibility. So, right, some cars may, you know, you may be able to use this on some cars, and maybe in the future you can't, because starting in 2023. 40% of the minerals in a battery must originate from a country that the U.S. has a free trade agreement with. And that percentage climbs to 80% by 2027. Then it also has to have a certain percentage of its battery components made or assembled in the U.S. So that starts at 50% of the battery built. If the car is built before 2024, it has to have 50% of the battery built or assembled in the U.S. 60% if it's made in 2024, 2025. 70% 26, 80% 27, 90% in 28, 100% in 2029. And the deal, I think, goes to 2032 all together. But I mean, those content things, 100% battery, US battery, or right. But wait, there's more. One final bit. It also has a little clause in it that says no battery minerals or components can come from entities of concern. And some have been interpreting that to mean China.
Just write China, shouldn't they?
I don't know. I mean, they will have an official list of countries of concern, I guess. Because
I've seen it. Entities. I'll find it. I'll put it on screen. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if there's a list out there. But I don't know if they've made the list official yet. You know, I'm not sure when that actually happens. But they have the language in the bill that they could, you know, they could say, okay, this country is an entity of concern, and so we're not taking. You know, importing minerals from or whatever. If you use minerals from this company or country, you can't get the rebate on the car if it's a certain percentage.
I'm sorry, I'm wrong. The list I saw this week was the list of countries that you have an official free trade agreement with.
Right.
It wasn't the official list of countries banned list. But
that's an interesting list, though. We'll get real quick.
So, you know,
anything stand up that's like Australia is like a huge lithium country.
Yep.
Chile,
obviously, the Mexican stuff. It doesn't matter because it's North America for the Ford Mach-E is being made there. What else?
Singapore. There's not a whole lot there except Australia and Chile.
Still,
as far as like lithium resources and cobalt, you know, there's no.
Yeah.
That's. So. That's crazy. Tom, do you think these restrictions will keep the bill from actually helping customers?
Well, you know, we don't even know for sure if this is going to pass. Right, you know, just as Manchin had been holding it up for a while, you know, Sinema still hasn't really commented on it. And then it has to go to the House and there'll be somebody there that wants to, you know, get their agenda passed like Manchin and we'll hold it up. So I'm not even that enthusiastic about this getting pushed through, but let's say it does. As you said, it's incredibly complex with the mineral sourcing and battery component sourcing. It's crazy how complex it is, you know, and even you take a look at Tesla, like I saw a lot of people saying, you know, this would be fantastic for Tesla. Would it really? the cost barrier is there's not. How many vehicles are Tesla selling today that cost under $55,000? I guess the rear wheel drive Model 3, right? And how many of them do they even produce?
Right.
You know, I know they produce way more of the all-wheel drives. They make more money on them. So, and we know they're supply constrained. So why would they load up and make tons of the vehicle that they make the least amount of money on? So,
but also, if I can interrupt, doesn't that one have the lithium iron phosphate cells from CATL in China? Don't they import them to the US and ship them out? The ones out of Fremont? I don't know. I think that's the case, in which case it'll have over 40% minerals sourced from outside the US, therefore wouldn't even the base model, even though it's under the price and is made in the US, the battery wouldn't allow it. So Tesla get nothing. And also there's a lot of the dealer word, like the dealer processes. If you want to buy a brand new car, the dealer processes it because some interpretation is that this is refundable, and there's some interpretation that it's not, because the actual word refundable isn't in the bill, but there's other things that imply that it is, which is great, and that's brilliant, and it should be. But all of the way, all the description of how it will work in the bill is what it is, the dealer. So the dealer, you have to buy a used car to get the $2,500 off from a dealer. The dealer will process the tax credit, then they get a payment, a federal payment, so that you, it's effectively money off the hood of the car if it's refundable, which is great as well. But it's all described in dealer, and Lucid and Rivian and Tesla are not dealers. And so there's still so many questions. So it effectively could rule out anyone who's a direct seller, in which case, double thumbs up to the Dealership Association of America, because you got you got that one in there. So many questions I have, but I mean, it right. might not even pass. Sorry, I interrupted you, Tom.
It's true. It's just such a shame that this is the best we can do. You know, it's just such a shame that this is the best we can do. We've talked, you know, ad nauseum here about the different ways we would do this. If we were to do the tax credit, it doesn't have to be this complicated. You know, you know, I can understand the sentiment on wanting to, inspire, you know, building factories here to build batteries and have, you know, manufacturing in the U.S. And if that's the way you're going to do it, they could have even accomplished that in a better way. I mean, yes. You know, it's a shame. This is what we get with, and this is just where the state of government is right now. It's terrible here. It's a shame. Let's see what happens. This is just the proposed, you know, bill. Let's see. I'm sure once it gets into the House, they're going to massage it even more. You know, maybe we'll end up with something better than what we see here. I'm not enthusiastic about that, but something had to be done, because the tax credit was, you know, severely broken, and we were about we're months away from, well, Ford probably hit their tax credit now, so we were going to have Tesla, General Motors, and Ford, the three biggest manufacturers of electric vehicles in the U.S., were not going to have the tax credit, and almost every other manufacturer was going to. So, something had to happen, but this pile of steaming poop isn't what we should get. You know, it's a shame.
Real quickly, I think this could really help the push to lower Tesla prices. Actually, I'm not sure if it'll bring like the everything down to like, because it has to be like $55,000, $80K for SUVs. So I guess the Model X is an SUV, but I think Elon Musk signaled yesterday that prices are going to kind of come down. Well, on the call, the most recent financial call, like last week, he mentioned that his Tesla prices are stupidly high, or I forget the exact expression, but something to the effect that they're ridiculously high, and they, you know, and yesterday he was saying
embarrassing was the word. He's embarrassingly high.
Right, embarrassingly high. And I agree, they're too high. But, you know, I guess they feel that they have to make up for the inflation, the cost of goods that they're paying for things. But just yesterday, anyway, he signaled that inflation, he feels, is going down, or is trending downwards, because they're paying less for raw materials and things for Tesla. So I think that's a signal that they will have room, if not now, very soon, to reduce some prices somewhat, because they've gone up ridiculously high. Like, I don't know, what, $10,000 for on a Model 3 or something? That's a lot. Yeah, Kyle, what do you think of all this mess?
I think it's a total mess and disaster.
Okay.
Yeah.
Lay it out. Throw it out.
No, I don't know. I haven't read it. I'm not an expert on tax code. I just think my feeling, as rudimentary as it may be for a lot of our viewers who want tax pushes, is, okay, we've already proven that electric cars are desirable without tax credits, Tesla. Right. And why should my hard work go towards someone else driving an electric car to get a discount on their expensive thing? And I get there's prices in the way, but my feeling is, if it's going to work, we don't need to incentivize it. If it's truly better, we don't need to incentivize it. That's just my feeling.
Right. Right. I think we can say you're probably like more financially conservative than some of us.
That's probably typically how it goes. Yes.
Yeah.
Financially. Yes.
And honestly, that's fine. Seeing where we're at now, I'm leaning towards saying maybe that's what we should do. Maybe we should leave it up to the states. If the states want to do some sort of a cash on the hood rebate, then let the states do it. And maybe just implement something. I would love to see a tax credit specifically for lower priced and used EVs, because I want to get people that can't afford a new car, that, you know, are struggling to afford a new used car, you know, and they're driving something that's 10 or 12 years old that pollutes like hell. It's some of the worst polluting vehicles are the older 100%. Vehicles on the road, that they're, you know, these people are paying more to maintain the car just to keep it on the road than what I'm paying on a new car payment, you know, and because they're in this cycle, they can't get out of it. I'd like to see if we're going to put money towards something, put it at that. Somebody, you know, let's throw money at used, more money at used EVs, and let the states decide if they want to do cash on the hood rebates for new EVs. If this is the best we could get, you know,
it could be like, what if you just trade in your combustion car for an electric vehicle in a certain price category, cash for clunkers, sparked a lot of sales in the auto industry, killed a lot of great cars. Sadly, you know, as a car enthusiast, it hurt. We had good functioning vehicles that we destroyed. We didn't export out to a different market, but it's never going to be done perfectly. But I agree, the tax credit that we're arguing with isn't helping the people we really need to help the most drive electric, because electric is the cheapest way to drive. The cars are safer. They're easier to live with. But, you know, on a $79,900 SUV, okay, why are we arguing about this? Let's help, you know, this $10,000, $8,000, you know, used car purchase. That's where we need to focus our efforts, in my opinion.
Right. So from my point of view, I see this as a climate issue. So the faster we can turn our fleet around, the better, the more money we'll save in the long run, I think, and we'll save in mitigation in just like disaster cleanups, all that kind of thing. It's like, I see every anything like this that reduces carbon is an investment in the future. I mean, that's just my point of view to throw that out there. And I'm adjusting my camera here.
Yeah, and Mr. Novak points out that the used $4,000 rebate is on $25,000 or less used vehicles, and the vehicles must be purchased from a dealer. So I can't sell you my EV. And I kind of almost understand where they're coming from with that, because you know, we could basically get a car for free. You know, let's say I bought it for $25,000 and I get the $4,000 rebate, then I sell it to my wife. And we do an on-paper transaction. She gets the $4,000. Then we sell it to our, you know, 21-year-old son, and get this. So basically, you could keep doing that until the car was free, and then be like, you know, now you only get one credit for every 3 years. But you could be like, okay, guys, this is our household car for the next at least 3 years, and then we'll go get another free car. We'll do it again. So I understand why they're making. I think that's kind of why they're making it go through a dealership, because now you'd have to sell the car back to a dealer. He'd want to make his money, you know, unless, you know, you have a friend that owns a dealer and you could do some funny paperwork.
There's always workarounds to anything, right? There's always on paper legal workarounds to these things. But I think the spirit of the law is in the right direction here.
Yeah, I think that's why they made it go through a dealership for used cars, at least.
I think that there's the two bigger things I'd like to raise on this. From when the bill was written by the House Democrats a year ago, or the part of the infrastructure thing, wasn't it? All the language was specifically United States, and that's all been changed to North America. So if you make your cars, if you look at the news stories just in the last week, billions of dollars investment in Canada by Umicore to make cathode active materials. You look at the amount of cars being made in Mexico. And so I think it's a really big deal that will widen where cars can be made and where the materials can, you know, can come from, which is a good thing. But also the China thing, I think, is a political issue that is a much bigger issue, in that the world's biggest EV battery maker is CATL. And actually some of the really interesting with the LFP packs, some of the really interesting things that are coming out there with the addition of some different materials to the to the different cathodes there. I think over the next few years, we're going to see some really interesting innovation out of China. And I think for a lot of people who don't realize, China aren't just making knockoff, ripoff, cheap tat anymore. No. But actually, they're the ones innovating. The US is seriously at a risk of being left behind on a global stage. And I think that you have politicians there who are looking on a political level of, in 10 years' time, you know, whoever is leading China at the time could burp and everything gets twice as expensive. And so this is very, very clearly, some say overly restrictively so, US biased, and to the point of, well, there's going to be no cars that are applicable.
Right.
But apart from the you know, everything that's worked in, the dealer stuff, and everyone's got their you know, their hand in the pie, I get that. From a bigger perspective, I do think this is, the intention of this is to encourage investment in the US. And because it happened on the same day, the president of SK Group, Taiwan Che, I think is his name, was at the White House signing or sort of doing a presentation on another $22 billion of investment by SK into the United States to go from 4,000 to 20,000 employees, another $7 billion into Blue Oval SK, which is the company with Ford. And that all got overshadowed because it happened at the same time as all of this news. And that is a huge investment by South Korea for materials to be, and for batteries and cells made in the United States. And so I think there's a bigger picture thing here that will bring some of those politicians who are doubters, sort of maybe, like you say, that's the Manchins who want deficit reduction and stuff, because this is in here, on board. And they could begin, I was reading, the legislative process on this next week, which, how can, you know, that's really quick. So it could get signed into law. I was reasonably impressed with bits of it. I know I've been a bit critical, but I think there were bits of it that were good.
Right. I like what it's trying to do. Like it's trying to encourage, you know, battery industry, mineral mining and processing in the US or, you know, or in North America. And I think that's great. I just think it's a little overly aggressive in how it tries to do that with the timelines and the amounts and everything. Cause we can't, you just, you know, flick a light switch and boom, we have, you know, so to make this work for people, like now I'm looking at this. Okay. So now, can I buy a Chevy Bolt? Am I going to get this if I buy a Chevy Bolt? I don't know. The batteries, we're going to need some sort of like thing from the government to tell us what cars are eligible, you know, ahead of time too. Like we need the consumers.
And
really
the manufacturers need will promote this as well. They'll say we're tax, you know, compliant. True. Or whatever it is.
True. That's great.
They'll play up the, you know, made in the USA because the LG packs, which are inside the Bolts, aren't they? The new ones, I think, are US made. So I think, yes, the Bolt, I think.
But are the minerals? Or are the minerals?
The minerals. That's a very good question.
Yeah. That's the thing. We got very the packs. Good question. You know, but there's like the other components. Like, oh my God.
Yeah. Even anyway. The batteries in my Lightning are made in the Georgia plant, right? The SK Innovation Forger. Okay. But I don't honestly know where the minerals are sourced from. So,
right. We don't know. Hopefully,
it won't matter for me because I bought it before this whole thing started. I'm going to get my $7,500 tax credit on the Lightning. But, you know, how about once, if this does pass January 1st, the Lightning might not be eligible.
Right.
Well, we should also mention, if anyone has a specific example, feel free to, if you can't find an example, I don't know, leave a comment or something and we can work it out together, like consumer advice. Because if you were genuinely thinking of buying an EV, because this doesn't, if you have an order placed, because this is going to impact cars not made in the US. So perhaps you're looking at buying an EV sometime in the next 6 months and you're thinking, oh, maybe when do I purchase? But the car you're looking at isn't made in the US or in North America. Then let us know. We can try and do a table of what you should and shouldn't buy, or maybe wait for, because until the bill is signed into law, so until Biden signs it, it's all everything. So if you have an order placed for a car before he signs it, it doesn't matter when it arrives. It could arrive in 12 months' time because of the backlog of EVs. In 2023, you'd still get the original, as in at the moment, the tax credit. So, you know, although, as we say, GM's hit it and Tesla and Toyota now officially, and we think Ford soon, if not very soon. So, yeah, we should try and work out what cars, not a time for now on the podcast, but maybe in a table or an article or something. Yeah.
Right. I imagine Inside EVs will have some sort of an article or a post that lays all those eligible cars out there. We should make that a resource on the site, I think.
Absolutely. And include the vehicles that are, you know, where the minerals come from and so forth. I mean, that'd be a heavy load for somebody, but somebody should get assigned that. Not me.
All right.
So one thing, did we mention, we've been talking about this for a while. We focused a lot about the battery mineral and components section of it. But did we mention that the vehicles have to be assembled in, required to be assembled in North America? So,
oh, really? You know, I didn't see that.
Yeah. The North American assembly requirement for the vehicles. So, You know, you're talking about, you know, vehicles being shipped over from Germany or whatever, they're off the bat. Doesn't matter where their battery components came from. You know, they're not eligible.
Well, luckily a lot of those companies also, you know, manufacture their cars in the US as well. Like, so we have like the Volkswagen ID4 is being made now in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Mm-hmm. And actually this week, it's one of our stories down the list that which we should move on to pretty soon. Kyle's nodding his head.
Well, this is big news. I mean, we could do a whole damn podcast.
We should maybe just make this a tax credit special.
Yeah. No, let's move on. Let's talk about the other stuff. Yeah. I don't know what else there's more to say, except, you know, until it passes and, you know, we can get a really good handle on what's going on. And besides, I know you really want to talk about the Mini Aceman.
Well, I'm a mini guy.
That's true. So let me back up here a little bit. On a less serious note, Mini debuted its Aceman concept, which is meant to preview the brand's first electric crossover. This may seem a bit out there at first glance, but this is apparently 80% of the final design. It will be made in China, maybe, by Great Wall Motors and available in 2024. So probably not eligible. no frunk, and will feature the new Mini operating system based on Android. So Kyle and Tom, you're both Mini people. Does this strike you as a good direction for Mini?
I think it looks great, but we need some information on, you know, what size battery they're going to put in here.
Right. So this is kind of weird. So this is going to be based on the same platform as the Mini Cooper, the new Mini Cooper SE that's coming next year, I believe. And I found one source that said it's going to have come in two different sizes or two different like power and batteries. So there's like a 135 kilowatt hour or 135 kilowatt a car with 186 miles of range. And then there's a 160 kilowatt output car with 248 miles of range. So I'm not sure that was in a Wired article or something. So I'm not positive where they got those figures. But so if we apply those figures to a slightly larger car, there could be have a 220 mile range, you know, I think off the top of my head.
Let's see if they're throwing what based on what metric, you know, was it WLTP?
It's probably WLTP.
You know, were they using the Chinese, you know, range rating method?
Because it's true.
Made in China. And that's, ridiculously, liberal. So we need some information. I don't care about what they tell me, how many miles it's going to go. Just tell me the damn size of the battery pack. And I can figure out how many miles it's going to go. You know, so if they're going to shoehorn, you know, the current Mini Cooper SE has a 32 kilowatt hour battery pack, I think.
Right.
You know, if they're like, oh, we're bumping it up to 46 kilowatt hour, all right, then, you know, forget it. You know, I mean, it's got to be, they got to have a battery pack in that thing that's like at least 55 to 65 kilowatt hour, you know, even though it's a small car.
That's what I'd like to see. Yeah.
They could fit that in there, especially when you double up the second row of the cells under the rear seat. Right. They could fit a decent sized battery in that to make it a usable car. I love the current Mini Cooper SE, and it serves the needs of you know, some people with its limited range. But, you know, if you live in a cold weather area and it does 103, 104 miles on the highway in good conditions, you're basically looking at 75, 80 miles of range in the winter. And that's just not, you know, a functional car for 80% of the people out there. They've got to make this be usable for 80% of the people out there.
Right. And now we're looking at this whole strategy. Okay. If it's made in China, it's not going to be eligible for these, you know, incentives. And so they'll be fighting some headwinds over in this market for sure. I don't know. But the car is going to look, you know, pretty much like this, except for the fascia. Maybe the headlights will get different treatment. I know the Mini people in our forum are not happy that it has not round. Minis are supposed to have round headlights. That's just the way it is. And these are not round. So I don't know, Kyle, does that totally nix it for you?
No, I'm not necessarily a purist. I've owned classic minis. I've owned modern minis. I think I've owned over 6 minis, something like this. I love them. I am a mini fanatic, live and breathe mini. The cool thing about this car is I think it looks awesome. I think they got the image correct. They know exactly who they're targeting, and it's not any of us. And so I think it's, they definitely got the branding right. Whoever did the photos for this really got it.
Oh, yeah.
On point. The headlight situation to me, Mini should have round headlights. It doesn't. Okay. It still looks pretty cool. It's fun. There's some excitement going on here. The big thing for me is it's not going to look like this. It's going to look like a Countryman, whatever the series production one coming out will look like. And it'll be an electric system. And it's going to not drive that great because it's not going to have a lot of power and it's not going to have a lot of range. And I don't understand why Mini or BMW is like, we don't know what to do with the Mini brand, and the sales have dropped off and the excitement's died out. All they need to do is just make some freaking awesome cars. It's just laid out right in front of them. Like it shouldn't be this hard. And meanwhile, they're putting in mediocre drivetrains, mediocre battery packs. They're going much more lifestyle than substance, and the car needs both, and they're just missing the sub. Like, don't spend all this time making this ugly, crappy seat on the interior. Right. Just make it freaking hammer. Minis are sports cars. They should be. This is their DNA, fun to drive. And they're not laying into anything like that right now. And it just says, hey, friend, when you get inside. It should say, hey, Kyle, not hey, friend.
Right.
It's like, hey, I don't know. I'm just angry because it's a concept, but also I'm happy because it's a Mini. And so, you know, very mixed emotions about this car.
Right. They're definitely pitching it towards the younger crowd. They're going by the photo shoot with the press release and everything. Lots of style going on there. Is it 80s style coming back? Is that, you know, 80s infused
retro, yeah,
retro thing going on here? Yeah,
yep.
You've not been watching Stranger Things on Netflix? Come on, it's all about the 80s, right? Come on, the kids love the 80s.
Yeah, unfortunately I remember the 80s.
Which means you probably got some stuff in your wardrobe that is achingly fashionable and you should probably wear it this weekend.
My high school sweatpants. I'll do that.
Yeah, don't dig those out.
I'll bust out my old members only jacket. I think I'm the last member.
All right. So last week we talked about, we don't need to talk about the Mini anymore. I think we've done Mini. Okay. So last week we talked about Ford lining up its battery supplies. This week it's General Motors' turn. So GM has signed an agreement with LG Chem for close to 1 million tons of cathode material, which should be enough for 5 million vehicles between now and 2030. So it also has enough mineral agreements in place that it says it can meet the goal of producing 1 million cars per year in North America by the end of 2025. So we had a couple commenters last week who thought we were dismissive of GM a bit because of the way we were talking about Ford. But personally, I think GM is really the company best positioned of the traditional automakers to produce EVs in numbers. This is an interesting. So we got 1 million cars a year by 2025. After 2025, so 2025 to 2030 is like, that's 5 million cars. And then the cathodes, they have enough for 5 million cars altogether from now to 2030. So it sounds like they're going to need some more. They're not quite done with their supply contracts, but a million cars a year. Does that sound pretty decent to put them on?
It's a million in 20. And that's actually, we did get some stick last week. I think I took some stick in the comments because I was maybe a little harsh on GM, and particularly that big headline, which they were trotting out. We're going to be bigger than Tesla. Uh-huh. And they kind of walked it back a bit. We're going to be bigger than Tesla in the US. Right. And then this week they walked it back again. And I appreciate that because what I said last week on the podcast, I need to watch that, is just give us your numbers and we'll decide whether you're going to be bigger than Tesla in the US or not. And they finally did. So they put out an investor deck because I went through it because I'm a loser and this is what I do for my free time. And in the investor deck, I found it in the PowerPoint somewhere, as you just mentioned, Dom, it says, I scroll down, we will have enough batteries, as you said, for 1 million units in North America in 2025. And that's all we wanted to know. Just give us the number and we'll make our mind up. And then we can, because Fremont's at 550,000 and Giga Texas is 250,500 by the end of next year. And so that is 1 million, just over 1 million from Tesla by the end of next year. And it's 1 million for GM in 2025. And you can decide how much Tesla will grow over those 2 years. So thank you for clarifying. You won't be bigger than Tesla. Right. We appreciate the clarification. Let's end all of the headline BS now. And right. Let's crack on and make some great cars. And that's the thing. This is what annoys me. This is brilliant news.
Yeah, it's great numbers. Yeah, that's fine.
But it gets lost because they like to wrap it up, or the media gets carried away in these big headlines, which are nonsense. So we appreciate the clarification. And now we look forward to seeing what the Ultium Cells and Ultium Cells LLC, which is the company that runs it, are able to do. I think it's going to be really, really good. Let's get on and make some great cars that we can all drive and enjoy.
Now we have to worry about, where are these mineral agreements from? Because, it's like making everything so freaking complicated. I don't know if there's a whole lot we can say about this because, it's not super, we don't have a whole lot of detail on what's exactly what minerals from what countries or anything. But anyway, GM also mentioned this week that they have 150,000 reservations for their Chevrolet Silverado EV. 150,000, so that's also pretty good news for them. And they'll need these batteries sourced from the proper countries to put in them. I don't know. You have any to say of this, Tom?
No, I just think that, I thought it was funny that we laid into them last week. Well, Martin really did with give us your plan and talking about how Ford has at least laid out their plan. They're like, okay, this is where we're going to be, getting materials. This is how many batteries we're going to be making. This is where we're going to be building them. And, we really didn't have anything from GM. But since our podcast last week, now we're getting some information and GM is laying stuff out. Not saying cause and effect, but the timing is pretty interesting that as soon as we really laid into them, now we're getting all this information. And as I said, I'm certainly not saying it was because of it, but the timing's interesting. GM talks a good game. We've said this many, many times. And I do agree with you, Dom, with what you said about they might be in a good position. They have the Ultium battery system is a big step up for them. We don't really know how good it is just yet because we haven't had a lot of them, but I like the fact that they're this system, it's the flexible architecture. It can go 800 volt. It can go 400 volt. It's all developed in-house. We just needed to get a little bit more information of how many, what's your manufacturing capacity. I'd still like a little bit more information about where everything's going to be made, where things are going to be sourced and all that stuff. But they're starting to put that out now, which is good. And I do believe that GM does get it, that they know that they have to make this transition over the course of the next 6 or 7 or 8 years. It's just, it's been painful in waiting to hear concrete plans. And I think Ford's been more open about that. And I think that might give us, I don't want to say a false sense of security that Ford is on a better path. We certainly can see the path they're on because they've laid it out for us, while GM has just been saying, oh, we're going to be the biggest, we're going to be the best. We've led this battery revolution. Just put your faith in us and we're going to be there. But hopefully this is the beginning of them being a little bit more open and revealing what their path is going to be.
Right. I was talking to John from Autoline actually in the airport. We had a great conversation and he also is like pretty confident that GM is also in a good position with the Ultium platform, just because you just developed the software, you can use the same software over 25, 30 vehicles, all the same method of construction. There's so much saved in materials and time and development costs that I don't know. I think they're going to have really great margins, better margins than they've ever had. And it's just a matter of, time of getting the models out there. Like in 2 years, they're going to start pouring out and, think the landscape's going to change quite a bit. So anything else you want to say about that, Kyle?
Just excited to drive some of these Ultium cars. I've driven the Hummer. And yeah, I mean, to me, all sounds great on paper. Who knows if you should even buy one? We got to review them. So I'm looking forward to doing all the tests.
Right. Yeah, I'm looking forward to an all-wheel drive Cadillac Lyriq. I'd like to see you in that. Yeah. Hear what you have to say about that with the five-link suspension and like the sound deadening system.
Yeah.
Right, with lots more power. And when I drove it, I had a fair amount of power, but you know, you like to have your 0-60s in under 4 seconds, I think.
To me, actually, I'm fine with slow cars. I think the 0-60 thing's kind of blown out of proportion. Like, I've been driving ID5 GTX, which we'll talk about in a bit. This is not under 4 seconds. Perfectly fine.
Right.
Yep. Cool with me.
All right. So I don't know if there's any other news that we want to talk about this week. So the first Lotus Elettre SUV has rolled off a brand new production line in China. I guess that's worth mentioning. That's job one. So good for Lotus, actually. Lotus has not really been like, it's not really like a headline automaker, but it's been around forever for, you know, decades, just selling like onesies and twosies of sports cars, you know, like very, very focused on like just a couple of models, right? So this is like a big explosion for this. This is a chance for this brand to really blow up, I think. And I feel like it should take its rightful place in the firmament of, you know, the heavens of automakers. Yeah, I think it has a really great potential for the Lotus brand to really blow up with this. And I don't know what y'all think of the styling. I think this is a pretty awesome looking car.
I think this could be Lotus's Cayenne. Cayenne saved Porsche.
Right.
And in mass production, it's not what the purists wanted, but it's what the people wanted. And that allowed for more purist Porsches to be made. I think that this may have the same effect, especially now with some Geely backing. I think this is the make it or break it moment for Lotus. If people don't buy this and they're not interested, I think it's a goner. If people do, and you know, this really works for them, then a really bright future for the company ahead.
Yeah, the interior styling is just knockout to me. If I had the money for this, I would definitely be looking to see if we know what the price is on this at all. The ballpark price.
Don't expect something super cheap. It looks great all around, I think. And I really quite like this yellow color too. I'm excited to drive this.
Right? Do you think about 100,000 or is it going to be like crazy money?
No, I don't think it's going to be crazy, crazy. I think this needs to be volume for them. I think we're going to be looking in that 70,000. I don't really know. I'm just guessing based off of where I think they would need a product, which is they've never been crazy expensive Lotus vehicles. They've been expensive for what
they haven't
you
had
get.
Any contents.
Right. But you don't get anything. So, right. But they're not like $1 million car. I mean, an Avaya would be, but you know what I mean? Yeah.
They talked about being less than 100,000 pounds and for it to be compelling against an iX or a Model X.
Which, wow, that's a big claim.
Yeah. When I look at this, vehicles. I think this is more sporty than the iX. So I'm not sure. Tom, is there an SUV out there that you think this competes against closer than the iX?
Yeah, it's hard to see the size-wise. It definitely doesn't seem to be as big as an iX, right? Isn't this like more sleek? It almost looks like that side profile is like Mustang Mach-E. Like, I love the interior too.
It's really big. It's a really
big. It is
big
really
vehicle.
Big.
Okay. Yeah, there's a couple of YouTube videos of out there, but there's like 22 inch wheels. Like, it's the whole thing is really big.
The whole thing's really big. Okay, all right. Then in that case, it would be in. I mean, we need to know the cost. If Martin's saying it's going to come in at under, if they say under 100,000. They're not talking 70,000 like Kyle was hoping. You know, then they would have said it's going to come in at under 80,000. So this is going to be, you know, a starting MSRP of 89.9 or something if they're saying under 100,000. So that's right in iX and Model X ballpark. And, you know, I think it would do well in that, provided it performs well for people that are looking for something that's a little bit more snazzy, you know, that I mean, the iX and the Model X, neither of those really just totally stand out. I mean, the most bold feature on the iX is its front grille, and it's bold in a negative way. So it's kind of plain looking otherwise than that. And the Model X, other than the fact that the doors open up with the Falcon wings, it doesn't really have very distinctive styling. And also, this is for somebody that wants that type of a vehicle, but wants to be flashy, you know, wants people to really look at them when they roll up at the restaurant or whatever. You know, I think the interior is beautiful. I don't like the exterior. I think it looks like somebody took an EV6 to pimp my ride, and they like put on body kits and stuff on it. You know, like there could be an EV6 hidden under there, you know, and then somebody just bolted on a bunch of crazy wings and wild spoilers and so forth. So I'm not a huge fan. I really don't like the front end with how the hood overhang is, but right. You know, I'm not the target customer for this. I'd take an iX or a Model X probably any day of the week over this, if the price was comparable.
Right. We'll have to see. Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing that though on the streets and getting this in your guys' hands, actually, or mine. I'd be perfectly happy to go for a first drive event for this. That'd be great. So in other news, Sono Motors, solar EV, one step closer to production with new design. Kyle, you tweeted out about this. So I don't know, this is like a new, they had a prototype already of like a little solar car. This little company, was it from Austria or Switzerland?
No, from here in Munich in Germany.
Oh, okay, Munich.
And
okay.
So, yeah, I was there at the launch. I got to, you know, I was there at the party and they pulled the cover off the car and 2,000 of Sono Motors' most loyal fans there. And I have to say, it was pretty brave that I went there because I reviewed the car a year ago and gave it a scathing review.
You were not kind.
And then they invited me to their launch party, which we thought was hilarious. So we're like, oh, we got to go. We've pissed off the entire like enthusiast community. Let's go. And only a couple people were like, yeah, that was pretty rough. But I just thought it was cool. The CEOs, you know, hung out with the guys who founded the company, and they really are nice people. But man, was that prototype terrible.
It was rough. It was very rough. Yeah.
It was rough. And guess what? It was rough. They fixed it. It's better now. I haven't driven it. It's going to be another, I think, end of next year entering production. This is a car that is going to be right around 30,000 euros. It has about a kilowatt of solar at peak, I want to say. So you pretty much don't have to charge it very often. I love that all the numbers they give for the charging rate are based off of here in southern Germany, which is not known for its sunshine. So where I live in Colorado, a lot more solar. I may never have to charge this vehicle where I live, actually. A lot of BMS work to handle the constant slow charging and discharging cycles so the packs don't become unbalanced. And it's like a car for non-car people. It's not for me because I look at this and I go, I would never drive that. But some people look at this and go, this is how I save money. This is how we car share. This has everything we need, and it's to get me from A to B and to not necessarily, you know, enjoy the motoring experience. And well, here you go. I think it's fine. And certainly there's enough people interested in it. And it was just really kind of interesting hanging out with the crowd of people who were interested in this vehicle because it was so different than any other automotive launch event I've been to. No one was talking about the car. People were talking about life and bicycles and their dogs and, you know, and the area and culture. Meanwhile, whenever we go to launches, we're like, okay, let's talk V8s and drifting and track, you know, all this stuff. It was just, it's a car for non-car people. And honestly, we need cars like this.
Right on. Yeah. Sounds good. Sounds promising. Did they offer you any seat time?
No opportunity to drive it. I got up close with it. But
maybe in the future?
Yeah, they said absolutely in the future. We're going to be hopefully on that first wave to go experience it and drive it. And I think, you know, the huge props to Sono because, again, we gave them a harsh, I would say fair review in our video, but a very realistic one. And I think they realized, they're like, yeah, wow, we're going to have like real car reviewers drive this thing. We better get prepared. And I think it woke them up a little bit. I hadn't really seen any driving reviews after ours. And now I think they're going to get ready to doing this properly.
Right. So 54 kilowatt hour LFP batteries. This is what you put out the things on your Twitter here. We're looking at on the screen. 120 kilowatt motor, front wheel drive, 11 kilowatts AC charging, 75 kilowatt DC fast charging. Not super fast charging, but
but it's not meant for road trips. It's meant right. just for city use, and maybe you never even have to plug it into anything. But it's nice that they gave it the capability to fast charge if needed.
True.
With 54 kilowatt hour battery pack, you can go pretty far with this thing. I would imagine it's pretty efficient, right? Like you could road trip this. I mean,
Maybe Sono should go talk to Mini and explain to them how to put a big battery in a small car.
It's actually a fairly large car. You would be surprised. The stylings. I mean, I can like sit in the back seat and almost put my feet out. It's really a big vehicle.
Okay. Originally, it was smaller, right? Wasn't it?
I don't know what it was originally.
I think it was always this form.
I drove was big.
Okay.
This thing's been out forever. I remember looking at this like before the i3 was launched in Germany, I'm thinking 2012, 2013, has to be like 10 years. And in that time period, BMW launched the i3, made and sold 250,000 of them and retired it. And this isn't launched yet, so in that regards, and I'm all for this. I think it's great, but technology has gone leaps and bounds in the last 10 years. I just hope that they've kept up with that. And I think it's great that cars like Lightyear and Sonos are pushing the envelope, doing things that the mainstream manufacturers won't do. This goes back to, Tesla did that 15 years ago when the manufacturers were saying, you can't make an electric car. It's impossible to make a long distance, desirable, long range, fast charging electric car. And Tesla said, well, hold my beer. And, Lightyear and Sonos is kind of doing that now with saying, the big OEMs are saying, you just can't make cars with solar. It doesn't work. The return on investment doesn't work. You don't get enough power. It's just not worth it. It's a gimmick. You could use it to maybe power your air conditioning. And now we have these little companies starting up and saying, no, wait a minute, we can do it. And I think if anything, what's going to come out of this, and I hope they do well, Sonos, I hope they survive. But even if they don't, what's coming out of Lightyear and Sonos is I think they're forcing the legacy brands to say, okay, we need to go back to the drawing board and really look at this and see if these guys are making it work, we should be able to also. So hopefully that'll happen.
Yeah.
This week, Koenigsegg, makers of mega cars, invested in Lightyear. So they see something to put their own money, and they're going to share technology and information, etc. So, and they've been around a long time. They're not going to spend money on stuff they don't need to. So that's a good vote of confidence in Lightyear.
Yeah, it's true. Koenigsegg is a pretty widely respected outfit, I think. So let's talk about what we've been driving this week. I'm done with the news. I'm so done with the news, man. It's because Kyle's been driving something really awesome, and he just put out a video just as we went live. So right after this, go check this out because he got to drive the. I mean, you tell us what this is.
Yeah, this is a Mercedes SLS Electric Drive. Which
what year?
I just knew it a couple hours ago. I want to say 2013, 2014, something like that.
Right.
Yeah. I couldn't remember the exact year, and then we checked it on the VIN.
So this is one of the older modern day electric vehicles.
This is the first series production electric Mercedes. They started with electric vehicles, but this is the first production one, I would say. But they only built 12, three of which Mercedes kept, and they sold 9 to the public. And they sold them for over $500,000, and they're well over $1 million now, in the market. So it's really a technical showcase. And Mechatronic here in Stuttgart, awesome, awesome guys, handed me the keys and said, go shred it. So right. I did. It was awesome. Went top speed on the Autobahn this morning in the thing and just absolutely sent it. It was awesome. But also $1 million car, let's not crash it.
Right. So how's it feel to drive a $1 million car?
Well, you don't really feel the $1 million bit driving it.
Right.
You try not to think about it. At least I don't. I mean, I drive everything the same regardless of the price.
Right.
That's why we have insurance. They have two. So if I crash this one, they have another one.
So they made 9 and they have 2 of them.
Yes. They have 2. And I was like, why do you have 2? And they're like, oh, why not? I'm like, okay. And
they have one.
CLK GTRs and everything. So absolutely amazing. This thing had less than 2,000 kilometers on it, but it's been driven out and about. And my friend Tim, Shmi150's YouTube channel, made a video with this very car And he's who got me in touch with these guys, because I watched that and I'm like, I think that's around here. So I messaged him and he's like, oh yeah, those guys are awesome. They'd for sure let you go drive this thing. And then nice. They were like, yeah, that's great. Come on and drive it.
So how does it drive like something from 2014, or does it seem actually
drives brand new? You would have no idea. It feels so solid.
It's awesome.
Really amazing drivetrain tuning. And, you know, the SLS is really special. I'm lucky I've got to spend some time with the combustion version of this car. And, you know, just sitting in there with this long hood and the gullwing doors is just amazing. There we are ripping down autobahns and, you know, the thing freaking shreds. It does 250 kilometers an hour, which is not crazy. It's about 150 miles an hour, plus or minus, but gets up there pretty quickly. Four motors. It's 750 horsepower, 550 kilowatts. It has a 60 kilowatt hour battery pack, lithium ion. It, and this was work today, which is crazy,
man. Right.
So it, you know, fully carbon ceramic brakes, which work amazingly well. It has, you know, fully adjustable driving modes, three different driving modes, two different, three different torque split settings. So you can go full drifty drift to sort of all-wheel drive stability. And you know what? It just felt great. And it's hard to evaluate a car like this properly because it's not consumer advice. No one can buy one of these.
Right.
You know, maybe one comes up for sale every few years. So it's really an experiential thing. So I'm not going in, and I talk about regen and pedal feel a little bit, but it's not like in the context of should you buy one. It's just like, this is a bucket list day and join me for the experience. And that's how I approached it. And I really, really loved it, but I don't think I would spend $1 million for it.
Right.
It didn't feel special, which was also kind of interesting. It just felt like I found myself, we got stuck in a little bit of traffic and I totally forgot what I was driving. It just felt like I was in a Volkswagen e-Golf. Cause it just, you know, and then you look at the long hood, you're like, oh crap, I'm driving this thing. But like, it's an electric car.
Right.
And we've spoken about this on the channels on this podcast, where I think some really special cars, they're special because of the drama and the noise and the shifting and the inputs. And this is not one of those cars. You remove all what's special about the SLS, make it electric. And then when you drive it hard, you're like, oh crap, this is like a lot of stuff went into this.
Right. I actually rode in one of these. I didn't drive it when they first came out. I was in here in New Jersey. We had some big company, I forget, it was a corporate event. They had like a show or electric vehicle exposition, and they asked me if I would bring it. At the time, I had my Activ-E, and they asked me if I would bring that there. So I went, and I was there talking about electric vehicles and telling people, you know, how cool they were back in, I think it was 2013, because I didn't have my i3 yet. And the Mercedes Mercedes North America was located in New Jersey at the time. And there was only like 20 miles from where this was at. So they brought one over, and the Mercedes rep took me for a ride in it. And I think one of the things he was telling me was, and I don't know if he said the vehicle had it or they were going to be implementing it in the vehicle. Kyle, maybe you talked about this. What they had to do was, in case of a rollover, you know, the hinges on the roof wouldn't allow you out of the vehicle. So they were exploding hinges. So what would happen if the vehicle did a rollover and you were stuck on your back, they would literally blow up and you'd be able to just push the door out.
Most roof hinge doors are like this, but it's the same as the combustion version. The Volkswagen XL1 was the same way, actually, as well.
Did it do that?
Just drove that recently. And it's so awesome. There's like a little pyrotechnic fuse in there of some kind. Not fused, but like a little explosion with a battery. You probably have to change the battery. I think on the XL1, you have to change this battery every 10 years. So this is probably due for a door exploding battery replacement.
That's amazing. I'm interested to ask, obviously, you know, you drove this today, having driven an extensive repertoire of electric vehicles, but this was out in 2013. So if it's possible to try and do some time travel, like, can you imagine driving this when there was nothing else on the roads? Like, because your reaction would have obviously been very different, apart from, hey, you know, you'd have been like, whoa, my God. So
we spoke about that during the drive, actually, and we were like, imagine driving this when this came out. It must have been mind-blowing, because here's the thing. What Mercedes perfectly accomplished They predicted the future with this car. It drives like an electric car today, but it was built 10 years ago. So you get out of a Porsche Taycan, which is what I drove to drive this, which is one of the best, you know, modern electric vehicles for performance, I would say. And I get out of a Porsche Taycan Turbo and into this, and this is still impressive to me.
Oh, and nice. That's, I was like, this is a lot.
Yeah. And I'm like, okay, this is, that's the crazy bit. Because if this came out today, reviewers would still give this rave reviews and say it's one of the sharpest and most enthusiast oriented electric vehicles. And it came out 10 years ago.
Right. If it came out today, they'd give it a 100 kilowatt hour battery.
Yeah, the range sucks on this really bad, especially at high speed and driving it hard, which is what right. It's meant to do. I'd be curious. They set an under 8 minute lap on the Nürburgring with this, but I wonder how much battery they used. It must have been a full charge.
All the battery.
Yeah, it must be.
Right. It's got, so each four motors, that's one motor for each wheel. Is there torque vectoring really in software? Is it?
This is what I'm trying to figure out. And there's not much information about the car because, basically there's a transmission front and rear that both motors are fed into. So I'm like, why doesn't it just have two motors? And right. There must be a way for it. In the technical materials that I could find, they mentioned this ability to apply torque to an individual wheel. To me, it felt like it was doing this when I had everything turned up. But again, I wasn't going to get it on the edge on public sure. roads in right. this, you know, top speed on the Autobahn is easy. An SLS sitting at 250 kilometers an hour, it's nothing for this chassis. That's just it waking up. But when we start throwing it around corners, I'm not in the position to write a check for $1 million for this thing if I crash it. So
right.
I took it nice and gently.
But you don't really need to throw it around a corner to see how it rotates. So does it seem to like rotate just as
it wants to drift
like butter?
I mean, every SLS is a bit frantic.
Okay.
So it's on edge. And I mean, like when I say I didn't drive it hard, for most people, I probably drove it way harder than anyone would imagine doing. But for me, I was as reserved as I could be.
All right.
Yeah. It'll rotate.
Nice.
But I wasn't like, you know, sending it onto Autobahns with a cloud of smoke behind me.
Well, I look forward to watching this video because I always loved this car. I thought it was great. I was really disappointed that Mercedes didn't talk it up more. You know, they had, you know, they only made 12 of them. Well, I mean, what is that? And then, and the ones they made were like cool. They had this great blue metallic paint on one and had like the neon yellow one. But usually it's not a color that I really like, but on a vehicle like this, it makes perfect sense because
I mean, I think cool car, but not the most consumer advice or so.
Right. So let's see what else we were driving this week. So you mentioned you just came out of the Taycan. Was that a Cross Turismo or Sport Turismo you were driving?
It's a turbo Sport Turismo, non-glass roof, Mission E wheels. This thing, when you lower it down to Sport Plus, looks insane. And great spec, has night vision. So I've been driving around at night and it warns you if it sees an animal. So if you're cruising and there's like an animal at night in the road that you can't see at all, beep, 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 everything comes up, lets you know, hey, there's a deer over here. And it works. And last night we were driving through a town and there was like a big festival going on and it highlights all the people in yellow and it was showing me where everyone was. It was amazing.
Cool. I was wondering about that, if it was like the sport across. I mean, it looked low to me, but I didn't see anything mentioned it specifically.
Well, there's no no fender flares on the side. This one also doesn't have roof rails. But I think you can get it with roof rails if you wanted to. Really, the only difference is a little bit of suspension kinematics and not this plastic trim. And so it naturally sits a bit lower.
Right. Could you feel much difference between this and a Cross Turismo?
Yeah. I mean, I think if you get out of one, this is by far sharper, and the turbo trims in Taycan are never the sharpest. They're like the cruisers. And so if you go Turbo S, it's cranked all the way up. And if you go GTS, it's cranked up. The turbo kinematics from steering bushings and other things, they change a lot more than they tell you, is real, you know, cruiser. But this thing, I've had to cover some serious distance filming videos because I was at the Audi charging hub in Nuremberg yesterday. And then I had to go down basically to Switzerland and then back up to here. And so this thing just sits at 270 kilometers an hour like nothing. So I've just been cruising at 165 miles an hour at night, no one on the road, just and then charge
too long a time
and get back on. It's awesome.
How long does the battery lasts at 160 miles an hour.
30 minutes full to dead. I did that test, and so there'll be a video coming. But pretty much, you just go flat out, you get a half hour, charge for 10 minutes, and then you get, you know, another 15 minutes at 50% or so.
I mean, so you say 165 mile an hour top speed?
Yeah, so it's 269 indicated is what it gets to.
269.
Let me do a calculation really quick. I'm the exact one. 269 kph to mph is 167.149 indicated. Yeah. So it's probably 165 miles an hour.
So that's for 30 to do that speed for 30 minutes. I don't know. That seems like a lot of mental load too, right?
No, at night cruising in this thing, I mean, you have to watch for animals. And like when you see a car, you get used to it, but you have to you are going fast and you have to brake, and safety's of utmost importance. So I don't want people to think I'm just cruising around, you know, being an idiot here, lane discipline, all this stuff, but you can do this and it's possible. Mental load, no, things dead stable.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean,
having everything rushing by you that fast and you just knowing that,
I mean, if you're the only one on the road, there's just guardrail on either side and you're just
fair.
And then when you notice the speed is when you see another car, and you don't really want to pass another car at that speed. You slow down and you try not to blow their doors off, and then you speed back up and you try to be as respectful as reasonably possible. But that's when you notice the speed is like, oh, slowing down. And then you're on the brakes passing them. They go. So, and Tom's been top speed in Taycan on the Autobahn as well. What did you think about how the car was at speed, Tom?
It's incredible how solid it feels at, you know, and I drove the Turbo S, Kyle, not you had the GTS or the Sport Turismo. So the maximum speed, maybe they bumped it up a little bit on the vehicles I drove. It was 259, not 269. And I was able to pin it at that for a while. And I think that was 157 miles an hour or whatever. And yeah, it's unnerving as you're passing vehicles at that speed. And don't forget, those cars are going fast too. They're in the lane to your right, and they might be going 100 miles an hour. But you're passing them at that speed is ridiculous. And you do slow down a little bit before you move on. One of the things that I found so interesting was, or so unusual was, after you've driven at that speed, say, you know, 250 kilometers an hour for a prolonged period of time, 5 or 10 minutes, when you slow down to 100 miles an hour, which is fast, it feels like you can get out and run the speed of the car. Like, that's true. Like you could, it feels like you could read the date if you pass a penny on the road at 100 miles an hour, right, Kyle? Like the pavement. You see things in the pavement that like your eye can spot. I think your eyes like get trained on that super high speed. And then when you slow down a little bit, you're hypersensitive and everything just seems so slow. It's weird. But yeah,
to me, it doesn't even seem abnormal. Like when it's a de-restricted zone, I'm just wide open throttle and just sitting cruising. And it just seems normal now, which is crazy to think about. I really can't wait for the Model S Plaid to launch here in Europe, because I think that's the only car that could give this thing a run for its money. Model S Plaid has poor high speed handling, but it's got a lot of mechanical grip. It has a lot of suspension compliance, but the thing's on some meaty tires, at least mine is. And so if we can get it to charge quickly and drive that fast, because Taycan overheats the way I drive it. Any electric car would, but you know, one hard blast on the Autobahn, a charging session throws it into turtle mode. I run the car in Sport Plus, takes all the air conditioning power and stuffs it into the battery pack. Battery's in the red, car's in the red. This one doesn't have the newest software update, so I'm going to come back and grab this car again in a couple of weeks, I think. And then this one will have a newer software, which will have better thermal control for charging. And I think it's going to help a lot with this.
So have you had the Plaid on the runway about your place? You have a runway that you have access to sometimes so that you can do full speed?
It's not that big. You can't get it up to max speed.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You need a lot of room with these cars, and you need a lot of braking room. Not just that's not a joke on the Plaid brakes.
Right.
But it's a lot to stop these cars. You need, as long as the runway is, would be your braking, just the braking.
Really? Okay. Mm-hmm. So you also had, so just before last week, you were just driving the ID Buzz, and we didn't really get the chance to talk about that. So this was your first time in the Buzz. And
didn't get to drive it, just got to check it out. So I drove, walked around it, saw it. And I actually, it was so funny. We're like, let's not even post this video. No one's going to care. We didn't add anything to the conversation. We just saw one parked in a in a building. We went to a museum and there was one. I'm like, oh, okay. And the video did pretty well. And yeah, I'm going to be driving it in a few weeks. So we got all that sorted out. So I'm looking forward to this. And just cool car. I mean, Europeans don't seem nearly as excited about it as I am as an American, and that's fine.
Right.
But in America, this thing's going to rock.
I mean, it's not interesting to see you standing beside it because I know you're relatively tall. You're what, 6'1"?
Yep, exactly.
And yeah, so see you standing beside it and get an idea of like it's a large vehicle.
This is the short wheelbase one, and we're getting the longer one in the U.S. It was so funny because they had two, and Jordan and I, we were at Autostadt in Wolfsburg. We were driving the Volkswagen XL1 the day before, which I think we need to talk about. Maybe we talked about that last week.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Never mind. So then I checked this out the next day, and this was right before we shot our podcast last week, actually. Right. And we thought, wow, they have the long wheelbase one here. That's pretty neat. But no, they were the small ones.
So even bigger. So that's,
I think a lot of people look at it as a minivan. I look at it as a status symbol. I think it can be a little bit of both. To me, it's just super cool.
It's going to be the best driving minivan ever.
It's just going to be so relaxed because that's what I love about the Volkswagen ID cars. They're soft. They're comfortable. They're relaxing. They have good drivetrain tuning. And they just go down the road so nicely, not sporty at all. And I don't expect this to be sporty.
You just mentioned you're in the also in the VW ID.5 GTX, right? So that's the ID.4 with a coupe roof, basically. And you're enjoying that?
Yeah, so it has the newer battery pack and the new Volkswagen 3.1 software. So it does auto lane changes and it does swarm data. It's got one of the best features on this car is... you can tell it if you want to drive on the right side of the lane, the middle, or the left. Okay. And I think it's one of the most useful features in tight traffic where, you know, there's these all these construction zones here because it's Germany. And so I can force it to, you know, one side of the lane to hug and it'll just ride that line. Then you just nudge it back to the center and it'll ride the center. It's a great feature. 180 kilowatt charging delivered to the car, a big upgrade from what I've seen on ID.4 in the US. And I think this is only the GTX cars get this battery pack is my understanding, or at least this software. And I have to research if it's a separate battery pack or not. I think it is. And so it was really awesome car, good cruiser, put a lot of miles on, massaging seats, and sits at 185 kilometers an hour, which is a big upgrade from 160, which is what, or, you know, it does 120, not quite, 110 miles an hour versus 112. Right. And that's a big difference here in Germany because a lot of people just cruise at 160. And so to pass someone in normal ID.3, ID.4, ID.5, it's not possible. But in this car, you get just enough to get by and sort of maintain your pace in traffic.
So the software in this car gives you some more confidence in what Volkswagen's doing because they've been having software issues for the ID family.
No, I wouldn't say it gives me much more confidence. I got in the car and the screens were black one day. They wouldn't turn on. I had to restart, get out, lock the car, open it back up. I can't get plug and charge to work. It's supposed to have it with certain stations on Ionity. I went to every Ionity station with every different station manufacturer. Couldn't get it to work. Yeah, I guess, you know, it's good. For some reason, I think it has the same sound system as ID.4 has, but it sounds so much better and it gets louder. And so I think they software tuned the sound system to rock. It's pretty interesting because ID.4 sound system, whenever you would go loud on the volume past middle and the bass would hit, your highs would come down because of the power load and it would blow the subs out. This will still blow the subs out, but your highs stay pretty good. And so you can play your music, I'd say 30% louder than the ID.4 without any distortion.
Nice. Awesome. All right. So you have a few videos up this week and you've been in a few different videos. I think you were in the Ford e-Transit as well, which I don't know if Tom, have you driven the e-Transit yet?
No, haven't driven one.
They're not for sale yet in the US.
I was invited to an event that Ford had where I could have driven it, but I had a conflict that week. So nope, not yet.
Wow. Okay. So what did you think, Kyle?
Ford E-Transit, loved it. I think it's one of the best electric Ford products. I know I can say that because there's only three, but it's actually like objectively gets the job done, does it well, really awesome driving, just feels like you can do anything possible to this and you're never going to hurt it, which is the point of a, you know, working vehicle. And I love vans. I love Transits in particular. They're the best handling vans on the market. We've done the testing. We've proven Transits rip. And electrifying it only adds to the experience. They're going to sell every single one they can make. We've said this about every Ford electric product. And there's enough use cases where this is perfect. Two big question marks here. The battery pack's quite small, doesn't charge very fast, and not very much range. So it's limited to urban deliveries. Yeah. The second is, why is it more expensive than F-150 Lightning with a much smaller battery pack? F-150 Lightning is at least $5,000 less and has a 100 kilowatt hour battery pack with, you know, sort of, I guess, a little bit less material in a truck. But I think vans are actually less expensive to build than trucks.
I think
and,
so, too.
So this is more money with worse hardware. And I don't understand it, except for scale would be my only thing.
Right.
I can't understand it either. But one of the things we've said here, and it's completely true, base F-150 Lightning Pro at $40,000, $39,900 is the best deal of any electric vehicle you can get today. Not just any electric truck, any electric car. You can get a hold of one of those base Pro Lightnings at $40,000 and there's no markup. Do it, because it's what a fantastic deal. There's a dealer right there. The dealer that I got my Lightning at has one. It's their static vehicle that they have to keep for 6 months. And I'm going to actually be taking one either over the weekend or early next week. And it has the standard range battery. And I'm going to be doing a range test. I'm actually going to take my Lightning and drive side by side until it won't go any further. And then, you know, as it rolls off the road, charge it with the Pro Power on board from my Lightning. So we'll do the 70 mile an hour highway range test side by side, and then I'll also be able to say, you know, when the standard range died, my car still was, you know, at x amount, 53% state of charge. It won't be that high, but it'll be at, you know, 28% state of charge. And I just did the 70 mile an hour highway range test on my car, so my truck. So we'll know exactly how much further it's going to go. Hopefully within the next few days, I'll be able to do that. But what a deal at $40,000. So, I mean, yes. I can't speak to the van, but the Lightning standard range Pro at $40,000, my God, that's a fantastic deal.
But it also shows that, sorry to cut you off, Dominic, this shows that there are, and it's what we've been saying on this podcast. There's not a need for long range for every vehicle. There's not a need for the fastest charging for every vehicle. If we're going to electrify urban transport, which is something I'm becoming increasingly more passionate about as I'm noticing like cars smelling, I'm like, why do I have to sniff all this stuff in the city? Like, I'm all for combustion. I think our audience knows that. I love, you know, driving manual transmission, fun enthusiast vehicles. I just don't want to smell that walking around a city and spending more time in cities here. It's nice to have electric vehicles and delivery vans. Like, you're not buying that for the enthusiasm of driving this 4-cylinder diesel engine. Just put an electric drivetrain in it.
Yeah, indeed.
And Mr. Novak makes a good point. Ford Pro knows its customers. Typical drive schedules less than 100 miles. They don't need to deliver, you know, they don't need more to deliver boxes to contractors. You know, rural contractors can opt for something else. And this doesn't have to apply to everybody right now. But yeah, I think it's the EPA range 126. That's not fantastic. Loaded up with some weight in the winter, in the colder months, you're going to get a lot less. But as he pointed out, Ford knows they have hard data on exactly what the driving schedule is for the fleets out there. And they know this is going to work for a lot of their customers. If it doesn't work for you, don't get it. Wait for that next gen Transit that has 250 miles range. It's coming, not for a little while, but it'll be out there. But for now, this is going to work for a lot of people.
Yeah, indeed. It's nice. So we need to wind this up here pretty soon. So real quick, Tom, you said you drove, is this the first 70 mile an hour highway range test you did in your truck?
So I did that. That was up a couple of weeks ago on my YouTube channel. It went 270 miles.
Right.
And, you know, similar to what – a little bit better than what Kyle got when he did it. But he did the platinum trim, and mine's the Lariat. So it was expected. I have 20-inch wheels. He has 22s. So, you know, right in there. I mean, I've driven this up enough now to know it's a 2 mile per kilowatt hour vehicle on the highway. Period. You know, I mean,
and back roads too. Do you notice, at least in ours, it was always just two?
No. I'm keeping really good data, Kyle. I'm averaging 2.4 on my daily driving.
Okay. Maybe that's in the range I was thinking. It's low twos.
Never
got it out of there.
But significantly different. I'm averaging more than 300 miles of range for just daily running errands, driving, a mixture of highway and my daily driving. I mean, there were a couple times I averaged 2.5 miles per kilowatt hour if I didn't get out on the highway. It goes significantly further at lower speeds than it does on the highway. I mean, the EPA highway range rate, city range rating was 350 miles on this. And, you know, I'm sure that I could do 325 just without trying, just running errands and so forth and so on. So yeah, it's doing well. I haven't done anything specific with it yet. I'm just doing tons of charging recordings. I'm going to put it together a video that's really going to take me like a month to edit and put together and everything, because I have so many charge recordings that I'm going to overlay and so people will really know how long it takes to charge, at what state of charge when you plug in. And I'm hoping that's going to be a good resource for a lot of Lightning owners, but it's a ton of effort that I'm putting into it, because literally every time I recharge the car now, I have to get my camera out and record it. But that's going to be a good video. It's probably not going to come out for a couple of weeks, but I'm going to have a charging video up first that just does like my initial impressions on the DC fast charging on it. That's probably coming out next week at some point.
Hey, before we go, Kyle, one of the most interesting videos you had this week wasn't even about a car specifically. It was about a rest stop, the BK World Supercharger Cubes. Right. And you have a video on this. So these are like at a supercharger location. Tell us about it. They have some cubes. I don't know what's the plan. They're going to be building more of these, apparently.
Yeah, I think part of our time over here in Germany is we've realized our audience, drives electric cars. We're all fascinated with charging infrastructure because it's something we all have to do. And finding new and interesting, ideas when it comes to charging is what we're interested in. And yesterday, the video's not up. I went to Audi's charging hub, which is their like experimental, what they want Audi drivers to charge with. They have 2.5 megawatt hours of energy storage, all from torn down development e-tron 55 vehicles. So All the pre-series test vehicles, they put all the batteries in this building and It powers this charging station. It's really cool. And it had a nice lounge. That video will come up probably tomorrow. This one, BK World, BK is partnering with Tesla, and they're building, I believe, 300 locations all across Europe.
100
a year for 3 years is the initial contract. And it's incredible. The thing is, it's not needed in urban environments. A lot of times superchargers are at places that are rest stops already or have amenities and things like that. However, with so many people driving electric, and now with superchargers opening up to all brands, at least a select few, and I imagine an increasing number, you're going to have to put these things out in the middle of nowhere. And people are just going to have to charge it. Every exit will need chargers, and not every exit has amenities. And this is perfect. This is a sustainably built. I don't actually know what that means. I know it's made of wood. They use a heat pump, things like that. But it's nice to say it's sustainably built.
Right.
And they can be put up in literally no time. And they're modular. So this one was two pods interconnected. One was a restroom pod that had really nice amenities, washing your hands. Just felt like a normal high-quality hotel's restaurant. Really nice. The other side, restroom, And the other side, it's totally unmanned. You get a QR code, took 2 seconds to sign up. I show my phone screen to this little camera. The door automatically opens. You can use this QR code to buy coffee, buy snacks, buy things. And they feature local healthy food from like different markets and shops and things like that.
Pizza.
Look, I think there's an automatic pizza vending machine. What's cooler than that? It was freaking awesome. And so, you know, this is really a great idea. And I think it's not a new one. Everyone's mentioned they'd like pods. I think it's going to be interesting to watch how they deal with safety concerns, how they deal with vandalism concerns, because anyone could just go in there. And certainly Europe is much better at this than certain parts of the US of less of a concern. But it just seemed so so cool. Really enjoyed it. And definitely check out the video if you're interested in charging.
Right. And pizza. Awesome.
And pizza. Tom would rate this pizza very poorly. This is not a Tom approved pizza.
This is not a Tom approved pizza, no. Hey, but it was funny.
How you need to eat, you know, I won't be that harsh of a critic, you know.
It was actually pretty good, I thought. I was like, wow, this is, yeah, not bad. The weird thing was, though, the pizza machine doesn't give you napkins. So keep some napkins in your car. Mm.
That's true.
A couple things before we take off. I know we're kind of up against it. Number one, I just checked and we're at like 75 likes. Come on, guys, give us some likes here. We've had hundreds and hundreds of viewers. Either you really don't like what we're doing here or you're just lazy and you won't click that like button. So don't be lazy. Click the like button.
No, number it's one. Definitely the first option there.
Number two. So we missed, guys, one of the things, and Dom, I should have pointed this out to you, but I totally forgot about it. We should have mentioned in the news, Dees leaving Volkswagen.
Oh, it's true. Right?
You know,
right.
If you remember, that happened, I think he announced it as we were doing our show last week. That's so right after, it was, or right after. So we missed that on last week. And I know we can't spend a lot of time on that, but,
right.
You know, that's pretty big news. I mean, that, you know, he was really, you know, one of the strongest supporters of the shift to electrification at the Volkswagen Group. I mean, he was pulling the company, you know, and saying, this is what we have to do. Do you think that him leaving now, that's going to slow down Volkswagen's electrification efforts? Where do you think he's going to end up? I mean, I think that a guy of his stature is going to be highly sought after. And where do we know that there's that bromance with Musk and Dees? You know, does he end up at Tesla? What do you guys think about this?
Go ahead, Tom. Or Tom, Kyle.
Yeah, so it's been a hot topic. Obviously, I'm here in Germany. I think the whole traffic stopped. I don't think it's unexpected. We've known he's had some issues with especially unions. Software has been a major topic at Volkswagen with Cariad. Honestly, being a disaster, at least from the consumer standpoint. I don't know what projects they're working on internally, but it sucks. Software is their biggest challenge. And it was interesting. I was in Wolfsburg last week, and three separate tables around me all arguing about Cariad. Separately.
Oh, really? Okay.
And it was just fascinating to listen to and kind of soak up this environment. And it's really a hot topic. And Wolfsburg's just Volkswagen. I mean, everyone there works for them. But this is the big issue. So I think that played a lot of role. I think he'll end up at Tesla, or at least doing something with Elon. I think he is a great visionary for electric vehicles. Now Oliver Blume from Porsche is taking his role. And this guy, you know, seems pretty good. And he's going to retain his role of CEO at Porsche as well. He's big into e-fuels. He's the e-fuels guy, right? So this is, I don't know much about e-fuels as much as I honestly should, but I'm not sure this is the right approach. And so, yeah, I would say Dees was the best thing Volkswagen had going for them for the electrification efforts. And now he's not there. Martin, though, I want to hear your take.
Yes.
Well, if you are a turkey, you don't vote for Thanksgiving, or I would say you don't vote for Christmas. And the problem is that his job at Volkswagen was to tell Volkswagen, who is partly owned by the local state area, partly owned by, obviously it's, you know, owned by a family ultimately, or family interests. And part of the representation on the board, it's very political, it's very union-led, is the workers' representation have a huge amount of influence and votes, and they're on the board. And it's his job to tell people, we suck at software, loads of people are going to lose their jobs or have to be retrained and move, and these are the things we're not doing very well. Buy the car. By the way, we're making like three cars a day, and Tesla are knocking out three cars an hour. So, you know, or a minute, rather. And so he is on a hiding to nothing with that job for as long as he wanted to do it. And I think he did the best job that he possibly could there. I don't end, you know, the guy coming in is much, I think, much more of a politician in that he is known for bringing people together and reaching compromise solutions. The viewers and listeners can decide, does VW need the compromise guy? He is the e-fuels guy, which does take an enormous amount of electricity and energy to make e-fuels, synthetic fuels. And you can argue, and there are the numbers, should we just not drive on electric most of the time rather than use electric to make fuel and then burn fuel, which is less efficient either way? Or is VW better in the hands of a guy who's going to knock heads together and ultimately be quite unpopular? Will he go to Tesla? No, I think he's 61 years old. And I think if I was on Tesla's board, I would probably fight for someone like him to be in operations. But I don't think he'd want to be the COO of Tesla. If Elon Musk ever dilutes his ownership to the point of he's more interested in going to space, or any of the things that Elon Musk is kind of currently fighting, the Twitter stuff, the SEC stuff, any of that kind of catches up with him, or ultimately, if just Elon Musk becomes a liability, like we've seen an increasing amount of the kind of non-fans. So like you got the hardcore either end who love or hate Tesla, whatever. And a lot of people in the middle who are like, I love the company, but can he just stop getting people pregnant, please? And it's like that side of it at some point could backfire. And it's not at the minute. And he's and Tesla need Elon Musk and he needs Tesla. Then a Herbert Diess person would be amazing. But I think he's too old. And you know what? I think VW, he just signed a new contract. For 3 or 4 years, when, as Kyle alluded to, earlier this year, he did the football manager equivalent of back me or sack me, and they backed him.
Right.
But they also did that classic thing of he was in the US all of last week. I saw him doing interviews on Fox and NBC and all sorts, CNBC rather. And then he flew back into Germany and they fired him, right? He did that thing of he left the country and they all got together and got him out. So. Yeah. Which kind of sucks, right? That's how lots of people lose their jobs when they're not around. I don't think they should have done that. I think they should have kept him and done the hard yards with him. But
yes. Totally agree.
My point is, he's just signed a contract. VW have enough money to keep him on gardening leave. I think that's him retired now. I think he'll carry on getting paid what he gets paid at the minute for the next 3 years. I think he'll see out his contract in his back garden. And then that's him done, which I'm sad about. I would love him to show up somewhere else and knock more heads together. I can't rate him highly. He came into VW after Dieselgate and he fixed a lot of stuff and he doesn't get the credit for that.
Yep, agreed. And he pissed a lot of people off. This new guy, but he's been at the company for a while, Oliver Bloom. He knows how it works. And that's the scary part, right? Is Volkswagen has never been a brand of innovation or change. It's been small incremental steps. And what Diess did was he came in, he's an ex-BMW guy, just said, we're going electric. And like, let's just do this. And you know what? It wasn't the smoothest.
Right.
But, you know, I don't think we'd be seeing ID Buzz without him. I don't think we'd be seeing ID 4 without him. So, yeah.
Will Oliver Bloom be there for a while? Because he's not leaving his place at Porsche. He made it clear he likes being the CEO of Porsche. That's his long-term thing. He likes doing that. So I had a feeling this is...
Because Diess was CEO of Volkswagen for a while and the group. And then they found the Volkswagen CEO guy. And then Diess was just the group. And now he's not the group. So it's doable.
Right. I just have the feeling that he's not going to be there that long. But maybe he is. Yeah, but I don't think the e-fuel thing is going to be anything that's ridiculously capital intensive and it's like a whole new industry you'd practically need to start, and the carbon savings aren't that great. I think you might as well just burn your gasoline really. I don't think it's that, and we're doing that less and less. I don't really see a future for e-fuels, but I guess whatever. Anyway, Tom, anything to add to that?
Well, you know, I want to disagree with Martin as far as Diess just riding off into the sunset. I'm hoping that's not the case.
Okay.
And I've talked to plenty of executives throughout the years from major companies that left comfortable positions where they could just ride out the sunset. I talked to BMW executives that were like A-level execs at BMW i, and they left to work at startups where there was no guarantee they were going to make any money, and they were locked in at BMW. They could have just rode out their careers, do what they were told, and just, you know, have these golden parachutes at the end of their careers. But instead, they just ditched everything, went to work for companies that they had no idea if it was going to survive, how much money they were going to make, because it's in their blood. They want to affect change. They believe that the transition to electrification was so important for us, and that they were in a position to actively shape the future, not just sit back and watch what happens. When you get to these positions of power like these, he can affect change that has global implications. So it goes down to his character, and I guess where he is at this point of in his life. Does he just say, sure, I'm going to go, you know, I'm going to go fishing now and just keep getting those Volkswagen checks and just relax? Or is he going to say, no, I've still got gas in the tank or electrons in the battery, and I'm going to continue to push us and push this industry in the direction that I think it's going to make a difference for my children and my grandchildren. So that's going to be an important decision on Deese's mind. The offers are going to be there. He's going to get an offer from at least one company that will probably be a dollar more than what he would get at Volkswagen if he just rode out his career. Somebody's going to say, look, yeah, sure, you can do that, or you can come here for the same money or more and help us right the ship. We need to electrify. You've done it before at BMW and at Volkswagen. Don't forget, he was a driver at BMW when he was on BMW's board before he went to Volkswagen, and was helping push the board there into more electrification. So what do you have? You know, where are you at, Mr. Deese, at this point? You know, do you want to ride off into the sunset, or do you want to continue to try to help the industry and the planet and push us towards a more sustainable future? It's, you know, the cards are in your hand.
Well, hopefully Cal will run into them. Well, you're still there for a little while in Europe?
Yep, still here for a bit longer than originally planned.
Okay, so maybe you can run into Mr. Deese. And
I'll just go pop by and see him for dinner.
Yeah.
I have met him before, though. He's a super nice guy. I've spent some time with him.
Right. And if you just like happen to run into him at his local supermarket, you know, with a microphone.
I don't really go to supermarkets, but
I know. Anyway, if an opportunity arises, that'd be great. So that brings us to the end of our show.
Can I say, congratulations to OutSpec Reviews for hitting 100,000 subscribers. Look, I know it's a vanity number, but Kyle, congratulations on launching a channel not so long ago. And now when we watch your videos, you're going to have a little YouTube plaque behind you. Congratulations.
Yes. Thank you. Congrats. Excited for the plaque. First milestone. You know, we have multiple channels, so it's hard to put all of our efforts into one. 100K feels good. Shouldn't, but it does feel pretty good.
No, it's great. Awesome. Congratulations. I meant to mention that too. And that's only for the reviews channel. So you also have the motoring channel that's up and coming still.
Motoring's probably the next one in line to hit it. Although my dad, Out of Spec Dave, hit 1,000, hit 1,000 in a week.
Right.
It's pretty good. Yeah.
Yeah.
My dad's channel is hilarious. If you just want to see this guy living the dream, just watch Out of Spec Dave. It's awesome.
Yeah. You got a good dad.
Yeah,
And also, Martin, your videos are you're back on the air. Live videos, EV News Daily is like,
what's up with this?
I know, I'm back. I'm back. I'm back
again.
I'm back on YouTube, but it's nothing that you haven't heard me spout on this podcast, but except 5 days a week. But yeah, if you want to check out EV News Daily on YouTube, just to kill time
or
to put you to sleep, the YouTube channel started again. So yeah, enjoy or don't enjoy. I don't mind.
I enjoy it. It's great. I gotta make sure I tune in now again. You're doing it. You know, this is something like audio only. This isn't about audio only. I'm not really an audio only podcast person. I like being able to watch videos, and so it's great that you're back on YouTube. So that brings us to the end of our show for real. If you have any questions or comments, you can leave them on the Inside EVs forum podcast thread or on our YouTube or Twitch comment sections. If you like the show, please give us a thumbs up if you're watching us on YouTube. Don't forget, you can find and follow our panelists on Twitter. Follow Tom at Tomologny at Tomolog, that's with two M's. Martin Lee is at EV News Daily. Kyle Connor is at It's Kyle Connor. I'm at Dominic underscore Y. Click subscribe and tap that bell icon for notifications, and we'll see you all again next week. Ciao.